Now, we've got Scott on the phone, Scott Greenstone on the phone from the Seattle Times to talk about, of course, about Seattle's homeless situation.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Scott, I read your story with a tremendous amount of interest because I think the perception is, I think broadly, that we're spending a ton and we're not seeing the needle move a whole lot. And I don't know that that's always been a fair perception. You've looked at this more closely than most. Before we get into the specifics, because you managed to get a guy who's been a little bit enigmatic here in Seattle, the former leader of the Seattle Human Services Department, Jason Johnson, sat down with you. Now, he's left the job, but he was famously reticent about talking to the press when he actually was the director of all these homeless services. So when you look at it, does it appear to you that the public concern about the spend versus the outcome is a legitimate one?
That's a good question. I think it's very fair to say, okay, look, in the last 3 years, we've seen, this was my first question to Jason, we've seen, you know, when he started, the yearly budget was over $80 million. The first question I asked Jason was, you know, when he started in 2018, the budget was under $90 million for homelessness, and now it's $165 million for 2021. And, of course, the problem obviously has not gotten better. So I think it's a legitimate one. I don't think there's a lot of discussion out there about when we're funding fixes versus funding like survival services. So a lot of that money went toward making our shelters better. You know, most of our shelters in Seattle used to be just overnight. You get kicked out in the morning and you're sleeping on a mat on the ground. And what Seattle tried to do was make it so that you can stay there longer, maybe all day if you need to, and rest up. You could store your stuff there, you know, look for a job, different things like that. That costs a lot more money. But I think at the same time, we're talking about really big issues here that are much bigger than whether or not you build a shelter or make a shelter better, right? We're talking about issues of serious mental illness. We're talking about issues of affordable housing and all the cheap, really cheap housing where people, you know, who lived on the lowest end of the earning spectrum used to live. That, you know, that's all gone around here, too. So we're talking about, like, huge economic, like, I guess, like plate movements, right? Like giant shifts and waves. But you're trying to sort of fix them with this little bucket of money, and you're saying, okay, let's build a homeless shelter, or let's make it better.
Right, right. And so when you're, that's such an interesting point, and one of the things that I've thought about in looking at this problem as well is that it appeared like while the city is getting more expensive, while the homeless population is rising, both as a result, like you said, of perhaps a national pandemic in opioid addiction, mental health crises, and we're not funding that sufficiently. And then the other thing that happened, and I think a lot of people sometimes miss this, is that all of those, you know, SROs, all those single residency occupancy, old sort of former hotels, there used to be quite a few of them in Seattle. They all went away to underdevelopment. They've become, I mean, the famous one would be the Publix, say, on the edge of International District. That used to be one of those places, and all of those like cheap short-term rentals, flop houses, if you will, all went away.
Sure.
At the same time, the rest of these things happen. I mean, is that a fair defense of anyone who would be in charge of the homelessness programs here in Seattle?
It's such a good point that you bring up, and it's one that people miss a lot, because when we say, oh, affordable housing and the lack of it has caused the homeless crisis, a lot of people look out at the people staying on the sidewalks and they're like, well, that person doesn't seem like they would be able to pay rent. But, you know, 20 years ago, they probably would, because there would have been a really, really cheap place, a flop house, a single room occupancy hotel, an extended stay motel, just like what you're talking about, right? There would have been a spot for them, right? And those spots are gone now. And we're trying to build them back, but we're building them back institutionally with, you know, I mean, you don't want to bring back a place like a the spot you mentioned, or I'm thinking about the famous one that burned down in 1971. The name of it is escaping me right now, but it was in South Lake Union, obviously in the middle of where Amazon is today. And you know, it was a fire trap, and it burned down. And after that, the fire department said, "We got to start closing down these single room occupancy hotels. They are unsafe." So you can't build back extra cheap places like that again. So what we're doing is we're building back these sort of institutional, less cheap, much more expensive places called, you know, permanent supportive housing, right? The Morrison Hotel is a great example of this.
Right.
Used to be, you know, and especially now that it's sitting empty, other than the folks who live. So there was a shelter on the first floor. And then on the third, fourth, and fifth floors, there are little single-room occupancy rooms. But there's also mental health clinicians there. There's substance use disorder counselors there, right? Like, that's expensive. That costs a lot of money. And most of the money that we as a region spend on homelessness actually goes to things like that.
So when you were speaking with Mr. Johnson, one of the things that struck me is he was always really reticent about talking to reporters. He wasn't always forthcoming when he did. I would say that you did, you know, heroic work trying to get answers out of him for your piece, but it still felt to me like he was not actually addressing it in cases the real primary points. And you raise a really good question here when you talk about the $165 million spent that, and I'm just going to read from your question, correct me if I'm wrong, but very little of that, or maybe none of it, goes to actual housing. It's mostly services. Now, my impression was that we were actually spending money to some degree on housing. Where does that actually, I mean, are we just doing triage at this point, or are we actually doing really moving people into some sort of housing?
That's a great question. People point to that $165 million. I did all the time. And it is correct. Very little of that went to doing anything, except for some of it went to like retrofitting a shelter, or, you know, creating an emergency shelter, right? Like the one in Soto during the smoke, when the smoke was kind of filling the air, and right, we had to get homeless folks inside. How do I say this? We are spending a lot of money building housing. In fact, we are spending a record amount of money building housing, but that housing isn't going to open for a while. I mean, it takes a long time, especially in Seattle,
right,
you know, to get anything approved and built up. And I think there have been efforts to build it faster. You know, Councilmember Andrew Lewis, the Seattle City Councilmember who represents some of downtown in Magnolia, you know, he and a few others from this coalition of businesses and homeless advocates called the Third Door Coalition, they've been working on, okay, how can we use construction technology, lifting some regulations that slow down construction to like build this housing as fast as possible. But the thing is that the federal government used to pay for building this type of housing. And now, I mean, at least for the last couple of administrations, the federal government has not been doing that. You know, they have not been building more public housing, for better or worse. There were definitely a lot of public housing complexes that, you know, weren't in great condition either. So for the federal government to step back and say, we're not building this stuff anymore, I mean, they just have way more money than the local government does. So it's like we're trying to plug a hole in a you know, a big seawall, right? But the water is coming over the top.
Right. That makes complete sense. We're talking with Scott Greenstone. He is a Seattle Times reporter. His story on Seattle's former homelessness director, and he was very reticent about being interviewed, was finally interviewed about where we're at right now and why doesn't it feel like we're making any headway. Scott, so when you sat down and talked with him, and I was, again, surprised that he gave the interview at all, what do you feel like he answered in a manner that actually sort of deepened your understanding, and what do you feel like he talked around from the issues that you folks brought up, or that you brought up with him?
I was really interested in his answer about nonprofits who maybe misuse public funding. You know, there's a strong sense, I think, among many readers and listeners, you know, to the news who kind of dig into this issue, they wonder, you know, are nonprofits using our money well? There's a lot of nonprofits taking a lot of money from, or a good amount of money from the government, and the problem, of course, is not getting better. So I wanted to ask him about his, you know, impression of that, because he was the guy who was supposed to pay attention to which nonprofits were spending the money well and which were not, you know. So I asked him about that. And I think his answer encapsulates both of the questions that you were asking. You know, first of all, he said, yes, often it will happen that we will send out a request for proposals, right? Part of the standard bidding process. We'll say, we want to build a new shelter, or we want to, you know, enhance, make, get better shelters, you know, send us your proposals, and they'll pick the best one, right? Or they will try to defund a program, but they will say, you know what, your program has not been doing very well, your shelter has not been doing very well as far as getting people into housing, we're not going to fund it anymore. When that happens, this, you know, those organizations, some of them that are well-connected, will go to their connections within city council, and they will say, hey, we just got defunded by the city. You're on city council. Can you get us funded in this budget? You have control of the budget, or you at least can influence it. Can you get us, you know, funded again? So that I felt was upfront. However, then I asked him, can you give me an example of that? Give me an organization. And he pointed to what I felt is a very easy organization to point out, which is this group called ShareWheel.
Right.
They run these shelters, and they have for years. They're a group of activists who run these shelters in Seattle, but they run them at a very low cost. And I will say, they don't have good data. They're very unwilling to share data. They don't get a lot of people in their housing, but they're also very cheap. I think, inarguably, the cheapest shelter option you can get, because they ask homeless folks to help run the shelter. When you enroll in a share shelter, they say, okay, you can sleep here, and you got to do a security shift, or you got to clean, or you got to do something, you know. And so you have to help run this shelter. And so they're very cheap shelters. Now, that organization is a very easy target. What I really wanted to know, and what I think he may have talked around, was, what about the bigger organizations, you know? Right. What about the ones that take a lot more money? Because these folks are running really cheap shelters, and their connection on the council is City Council Member Kashama Sawant, who, you know, is also kind of an activist and also right. an easy target. But what about other, you know, nonprofits? And, of course, part of my work with Project Homeless on the Seattle Times, which is the Seattle Times kind of effort to examine what is causing this persistent homelessness crisis and what can fix it, is to look into some of these you know, some of the efforts that are not working so well. It's tough to try and call a nonprofit to account, because I do think that most people who work at nonprofits are well-intentioned, and many of them are underpaid. But sometimes, you know, when you've been doing the same thing for 10 or 15 years, you know, you need to innovate and change things. And a lot of people right now are saying, you know what, shelters don't work. We need to move beyond shelters. What can we do to try and actually fix this problem? Let's stop doing the same thing we've been doing. I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. So we're talking to Scott Greenstone, Seattle Times reporter, who worked on, I should have mentioned this earlier, the Project Homeless project for the Seattle Times, which is this ongoing look at what is effective and what is ineffective in the effort to battle homelessness in Seattle. Scott, let me ask one sort of broad question for somebody who's been looking at this for a long time. Does the homelessness problem sometimes suffer with that whole adage about perfection being the enemy of progress? In other words, we're always looking for the ideal solution rather than solutions that at least start moving things forward? Or is that not maybe a fair assessment?
Oh, man, that's a good question. That's not one that gets asked enough. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. You know, the good is not always the enemy of the best. And I think that you're right. You know, I was thinking of a study that came out of, I believe it was Stanford a few years ago, and it looked at the number of shelter beds that cities had, and it found that over the years, if a city built more shelter, it would actually then need more shelter later on. And so, yes, you know, congregate shelters are bad. Yes, congregate shelters are
flawed.
Yes, congregate shelters are, you know, they're good for survival, right? When you put someone on a mat on the ground, they're going to live that night where they might not have if it's snowing outside, right?
Right.
But at the same time, you know, you can't really sleep in a shelter. I've talked to many folks that are woken up in the middle of the night by someone yelling, or, you know, you may not feel safe in a shelter. There are often folks doing drugs and things like that. So I think that survival services, if you only invest a little bit, I think you may see that the problem tends to get worse because the causes are so much bigger than what you're investing, right? If you invest enough to try and fix the problem, you know, I think that you put in a little bit more on the front end. I think that you then save yourself money on the back end. You know, a good example of this is 1811 Eastlake downtown, which was this housing that was really controversial at the time. It was called wet housing.
Wet housing, for habitual alcoholics, right?
Exactly. And so we gave rooms to alcoholic folks who were living out on the streets. And what we actually found is that we saved money because they weren't getting 911 called on them so much. They weren't getting taken in an ambulance to the hospital, things like that. So that expensive upfront amount that we paid, we actually saved money in the end because we kind of sort of fixed the problem,
right?
Or at least we applied a pretty hefty Band-Aid, right?
Right.
We fixed one big chunk of that problem, maybe not the whole problem, but certainly enough to save us some money. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, absolutely it does. That was Scott Greenstone. He is a Seattle Times reporter on Project Homelessness. His story on Seattle's former homeless director on why we spend so much without a fix. And it was heroic work to try and squeeze that answer out of him. Scott, thank you for joining Cairo Nights.
Thank you so much, Mike. Anytime.
More Cairo Nights coming up right after the break. Stay tuned.